Although the vast majority of korbanos chatos are sacrifices brought in order to atone for somebody's sin, the one exception to that is when a woman gives birth, she is obligated to bring a korban chatos of a bird, despite the fact that she has not actually committed any particular sin. As well as that, she's also obligated to bring a korban oilah, but the focus of the Mishnayos, the rest of this perek, are more focused on the bird korban chatos that she is obligated to bring. And the Mishnah tells us that yesh mevias korban v'nechal, there are women who would be obligated to bring this korban, and the korban's meat would be eaten by koyanim, who are serving in the Beis HaMikdosh during that week that the korban is offered up. Just like the meat of any korban chatos is given to the koyanim, this applies to this korban as well. And that indeed would be in a regular scenario of a woman giving birth, she would bring a korban chatos, and the meat of that bird would be eaten by the koyanim. However, the yesh mevias v'eino ne'echal, there are certain women who would be obligated to bring this korban, but it would not be eaten. And as we're going to see in the coming Mishnayos, this would apply in cases where she is in doubt as to whether she gave birth or whether the fetus which had grown inside of her grew to a sufficient level to be considered a human being. She didn't give birth to a surviving child. However, if the fetus would have developed to a sufficient level, then she would still be obligated to bring these sacrifices, these korbanos, even if she doesn't give birth to a surviving child. However, in cases where we're under doubt as to whether it's considered to be a sufficiently developed fetus or not, out of doubt she must bring the korban. However, it would not be eaten, in case indeed that is not a korban. If it's not a korban, that means that the slaughtering which was done was actually not a slaughtering which would permit it to be eaten. The law is that although in general, in order to kill animals to eat them, they need to be slaughtered with a shechita knife, when it comes to offering up bird korbanos, they are killed with the kohen's fingernail, the sharp nail of his thumb. And that is a unique way of killing the animal, specifically when the animal is brought as a korban, specifically the bird. Now, if a bird was not actually a korban because she wasn't obligated to bring the korban, that means that the bird was killed in a way that does not permit the meat to be eaten as regular meat. And that is why the meat of that korban cannot be eaten out of doubt. V'yesh einu mevias, and there are certain women who do not bring a korban at all. This refers to women who something did develop inside of their stomachs, possibly the beginning of a fetus, but it didn't develop sufficiently enough to obligate her to bring these korbanos of a woman who gives birth. So the Mishnah begins, Elim Mevias Korban V'Nechal, the following women would be obligated to bring the korban chatos, and the korban oila, which is the second korban that she has to bring. That one is totally burnt on the Mizbeach, but regarding the korban chatos, it would be eaten, just like a woman who gives birth to a regular surviving child. If she miscarries a fetus which has the form or the facial features of a domestic animal or a more wild animal or of a bird, that's the opinion of Meir, who understands that even if she gives birth to something which appears to be like an animal, that would still obligate her in the same way as if she had given birth to a human child. She's only obligated to bring a sacrifice, a korban chatos and a korban oila, if the fetus has the form of a human being, of a human child. Hamapelet sandal, one who, if the woman miscarries and what exits her body is a fetus which appears to have been crushed, or the face of the child appears squashed, almost as if a sandal has been pressed on it. Since we can still see that it has developed enough, this would obligate her in a korban, a shilya, or if what comes out of her body, if that which she aborts is the sac in which a fetus grows and develops, this is a definite sign that there was a fetus, even if we can't see the fetus at all. This sac is only created with the creation of a fetus, v'shofrim merukam, a oval-shaped piece of flesh which has got some form carved into it, so you can see that it's the form of a human fetus, of a child, or if the fetus comes out of the mother's womb, comes out of the mother's body, cut up, if they needed to cut up the fetus in order to take it out, in order not that the woman survive, for example, then she would be obligated to bring a carbon, although the child didn't survive. It did still develop enough in order to obligate her to bring this carbon. Similarly, a non-Jewish maidservant who is owned by a Jew, once she becomes owned by a Jew, she is obligated to keep any mitzvah that a Jewish woman is obligated to keep, and therefore, when she miscarries, she would be governed by the same rules, and in any of these cases, mevia korban v'ne'echal, she would also be obligated to bring a korban, and it would be eaten. And in this way, she is exactly the same as a regular Jewish woman. Mishnah Dalet, Eilu Mevias Ve'Einu Ne'echal. In the following cases of a doubtful development of the woman's fetus inside of her body, she will need to bring the carbon in case indeed it did develop enough, but it wouldn't be eaten in case she's not obligated to bring a carbon. Hamapeles Ve'Einu Do'a Ma'apila. If she aborts a child, she miscarries, and the child doesn't survive, and it's unknown what exactly she miscarried, what state the child was in. Similarly, two women who miscarry, and one of the half-developed children would be of an exempt kind, it would not obligate the mother to bring a carbon, and one of them would obligate the mother to bring a carbon, and they get mixed up, we're not sure which one was born from which woman. In that case, they would both be obligated to bring a korban chatos in case they were the one who is obligated. However, of course, it cannot be eaten. Omar Biyasi Emosai, Rabbi Yossi said, when exactly is this true? That they should both bring a korban chatos and neither of them can be eaten. Bizman sheholchu zo lemizrach zo lemaarov. In a case where they left each other, this one went to the east, this one went to the west, and they don't know each other, they haven't got a way of meeting, and they are not currently together. However, if they are both standing there together, and they are able to bring one korban chatos jointly, then mevias korban, they should both bring one korban chatos together, and they should state a condition when they bring the korban chatos and they give it over to a kohen to offer it up. They should stipulate that it should be on behalf of the one who is in reality obligated to bring that korban. And that way, there is nothing wrong with the korban at all, and v'ne'echol, the meat, can be eaten by the koyanim. It should be noted that in all of these cases of a doubt, when the woman brings the korban oila, for a korban oila, there's such a thing as a voluntary korban oila. So she should stipulate that if she is indeed obligated to bring the korbanos, then her korban oila should be for the sake of her obligation. But if she's in reality not obligated, then it should be a voluntary korban oila. And that way we escape any problems regarding the korban oila. The only issue is regarding the korban chatos, and that's why the meat of the korban chatos cannot be eaten. Mishnah Hey, now we reach the third category, Elu She'enon Mevias, the following women who produce some sort of fetus, however the fetus does not develop sufficiently enough, and therefore they would not be obligated to bring a korban at all. Hamapeles Shofir, one who aborts, she miscarries a piece of flesh, which is mole mayim, or it's a piece of flesh or some sort of tube, which is full of water, or mole dom, it's full of blood, mole geninim, full of different colored liquids. Since it's all liquids, nothing has really formed, it's clear that no fetus had developed properly, and she would not be obligated to bring a korban. Likewise, mapeles kamin dogim v'chagovim, if she miscarries to a piece of flesh which seems to have the form of fish, or of locusts, shikotsim or mosim, different small animals, creeping animals, although it would be considered a child, perhaps developed enough, but it's not a human, and therefore she would not be obligated. If she miscarries and the child comes out on the 40th day since she became pregnant, since the fetus was conceived, or at any point until the 40th day, and including the 40th day, like Mishnah says, that is not considered sufficiently developed to obligate her to bring a korban. And if the child was born via a cesarean section as opposed to a natural birth, even if it's a surviving child, in such case she would not be obligated to bring a korban at all. And in this last example, according to this opinion of the Mishnah, it's learnt out of Pesukim that only for a natural birth would she be obligated to bring these korbanos. However, Rabbi Shimon obligates the woman to bring a korban in the case of a cesarean section birth, because he learns from different psukim that even if it's not a natural birth, she would still be obligated to bring the korbanos, just like any woman when she gives birth. Mishnah Vav, when a woman gives birth to a male child, to a baby boy, She's considered to be impure, tomei, for a period of 1 week, during which she's forbidden to have relations with her husband. Once that week is over, she goes to the mikveh in order to purify herself. And then there is a period of 33 days until the 40th day after the birth, during which she would remain pure even if she bleeds in a way that would usually make her impure. In general, every month a woman goes through a period where her bleeding would make her impure, tomei. However, during this 33-day period, even when she bleeds, that would not make her impure. Now, if she gives birth to a female child, then those figures are doubled. So she would be tomei, she would be impure for a period of 2 weeks, 14 days. And then she would have this period of 66 days of being pure, even if she bleeds in the way that would usually make her impure. Now, once this period is over, on the 41st day or the 81st day, she is obligated to bring the korbanos, the sacrifices that a woman needs to bring after childbirth. She only would do that on the 41st day or the 81st day after she had given birth. Now, the halacha is that if the woman miscarries a new child within this period of 40 or 80 days, now, in general, if she miscarries a child, that would obligate her to bring a korban, just like any woman who gives birth. A miscarriage is also considered sufficient to obligate her to bring a korban, as long as it takes place after the fetus has developed enough. In general, we assume that's 40 days. So certainly in a case where her first child was a girl, there's enough time within those 80 days for her to miscarry, at which point she should really become obligated to bring the sacrifices, the korbanos, that a woman needs to bring when she miscarries or gives birth. However, that is not the case, and the law is that since this occurred before the time that she was able to bring the korbanos for her first childbirth, so by bringing those korbanos, that would exempt any other births or miscarriages that she would have during that period. So if, let's say, she miscarried on the 70th day after having given birth to her first baby girl, she would only need to bring one set of korbanos on the 81st day, and that would exempt her, that would fulfill her obligation for both births. However, if she miscarries, let's say, on the 81st day, even if it happens before she managed to bring her korbanos, since it's already occurred from a point that she was able to bring her korbanos, and after her 66-day period, her 80 period of waiting, of having these special laws of when she bleeds, she won't be impure, etc., since this occurred after that whole period, this would now obligate her to bring a new set of sacrifices for that miscarriage. This period of 40 or 80 days is called the melos. The discussion of our Mishnah is Mapeles Erle Shmeinim Ve'Echad, one who miscarries on the night of the 31st day. In Jewish law, the night always comes before the day. So the night of the 81st day is after the period of 80 days is over. It's after the melos, that period of 80 days. However, on the other hand, it's before the earliest time that she is able to bring a korban for her first childbirth. Korbanos can only be offered up during the daytime. So if she miscarries during the night of the 81st day, b'shamai patrim in her korban, b'shamai say that she is exempt from bringing a new sacrifice, a new set of sacrifices for this miscarriage, because he understands that since she gave birth before the earliest time that she was able to bring a korban for her first birth, it's as good as if she had miscarried during the melos itself, and therefore she would not be obligated to bring a new korban for this other birth. Rather, the one korban that she brings that following day will be good enough to cover both births. Beis Hillel and Chayvin, however, Beis Hillel say that she is obligated to bring a new set of korbanos for this miscarriage, because at the end of the day, it occurred after the period of the melos. It occurred after the 80 days. And Beis Hillel bring two claims against Beis Shammai. On Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel said to Beis Shammai, Mashana Erle Shmeinim Ve'Echad Miyom Shmeinim Ve'Echad. What's the difference between the night of the 81st day and the day of the 81st day? Either way, it's after the period of melos has ended. And furthermore, Im Shoveh Leila Tumah, if the law of the 81st night is the same as the 81st day for the laws of impurity, meaning it's no longer during that 66-day period that if she bleeds, she will not become impure. And everybody agrees that if she bleeds and on the 81st night, she would become impure because the malois is over. So leish vele lakarban. Should the 81st night not have the same status as the 81st day, also in terms of the laws of bringing the sacrifices? Omulhem Bisham, Bisham said back to Bis Hillel, Loi, no, that's not a good comparison. Because Imamaitim Bama Pelesim Shrein of Echod, if you're going to talk about a case where she miscarries on the day of the 81st day since the childbirth, so Shekein Yotza, in that case, she's indeed left the Melois period that she has after the first childbirth, and she miscarried Bishar Shehi Ru'uya Lahaviva Karban, at a time that is already fitting for her to bring a sacrifice for her first birth. But Tomim Mapeles, early Shrein of Echod, can you say the same thing with a woman who miscarries on the night of the 81st day, Shaloyotza Bishar Shehi Ru'uya Lahaviva Karban? She hasn't yet ended and left that original birth, because it's not yet a time that is fitting to bring the korban for the original birth. So she is, technically speaking, still sufficiently close and connected with that original birth, such that she would not be obligated to bring a second set of korbanos for this miscarriage. Omrehem Beis Hillel, Beis Hillel said to Beis Shammai, I'm going to bring you a different proof. Even you agree with me that the following law is true. The law regarding a woman who miscarries on the 81st day, when the 81st day falls on a Shabbos, that will prove my point. Because in that case, she didn't end her Melois period at a time that was fitting to bring her Korban, because the law is that on Shabbos, it's forbidden to bring any private Korbanos. Only korbanos brought on behalf of all of the Jewish people are brought on Shabbos. So in such a time, on the 81st day, she is not able to bring a korban. If that's how it falls out, she'll need to wait until the 82nd day to bring a korban. And yet, everybody agrees that if she miscarries on that 81st day on the Shabbos, that she is v'cheres b'korban, she is obligated in a new set of sacrifices for that miscarriage, even though it occurred before the earliest time for her to be able to bring a korbanos. Because the way it fell out, even though it's the 81st day, this particular woman is only able to bring her korbanos from the 82nd day. And yet even you agree that that's okay, that she would be obligated in a second set of korbanos in that case. Omulhem Beis Shammai. Sorry, a second. And therefore, why would it be different on the regular 81st night? That although it's before the earliest time she's able to bring a korban, since it happened after the end of the Melois, the 80-day period, it should obligate her in a new set of korbanos. Omulhem Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai answered to Beis Hillel, Loi, that's not a good proof, because there's a difference. If you're talking about a case where she miscarries on the 81st day, which happens to fall on a Shabbos, even though it's true that one is not able to bring a private individual's korban on Shabbos, nevertheless, royal korban tzibur. The day of Shabbos is a day which is fitting to bring a sacrifice on behalf of all of the Jewish people. So essentially, that day is a day which is fit for bringing korbanos. Just what? It happens to be, for technical reasons, this woman is not actually able to bring a korban that day, because it's forbidden for her to bring a private korban on Shabbos. But the actual day is considered to be a day fitting for korbanos. It's similar to a woman who, for other technical reasons, wasn't able to bring a korban on the 81st day. She slept in. Obviously, you would agree with me in that case that if she miscarries, she would be obligated in a new set of korbanos, because the time for bringing her korban has arrived. So even in this case, technically, the time for bringing her korban has arrived, just as a technical problem that she's forbidden to bring the korban. But if we come to define that day, it's still considered to be a day and a time that is fit for bringing korbanos. And therefore you cannot prove you can't prove to a case where she miscarries on the night of the 81st day, because nighttime is a time that is not fit to bring any korbanos, not a private sacrifice, nor a public one. And therefore, in that case, it's literally a time which is defined as not being able to bring korbanos. And therefore, it's just considered to be an extension of the 80-day period of Melois, for which she would not be obligated to bring a new korban for her second miscarriage. Or her first miscarriage, but it would be included in the korban bought for her original birth. And in terms of your second proof-based Hillel that you wanted to prove from the fact that if she bleeds on the night of the 81st day, then she does become impure. So we see that it doesn't have the same laws as the Melois period. You cannot prove from the status of her blood making her impure, because there is a difference between the status of the blood when she bleeds and when she miscarries. Because one who miscarries a child during the Melois period of 80 days, or at least during the last 66 days, the blood which comes out of her at that point when she miscarries would make her impure, even though blood generally doesn't, because there it's blood of childbirth. Childbirth makes a woman impure. And yet, at the same time, even though she miscarried during the 66 days and she became Tomei, nevertheless, Uptorimina Carbon. Everybody agrees that she's exempt from bringing a carbon if she miscarries during the Melois period. So too, on the 81st night, although she would become impure if she bleeds, that does not necessarily mean that she'll be obligated to bring a carbon, just like we see regarding a woman who miscarries during the Melois. Then in that case, she becomes impure, but she's exempt from a carbon. So we see that these things are not necessarily dependent on each other. So yeah, it's true that if she bleeds on the 81st night, she would become impure, but that does not necessarily mean that she would definitely be obligated to bring a carbon if she miscarries on the 81st night.